Welcome to the Flash F1 podcast with Gil and Mark.
Thank you for choosing Flash F1. We're a Canadian podcast where Mark and I bring to you our talks about the most recent race and our passion for Formula One. Since Flash F1 started this podcast for the 2019 season, we are overwhelmed to all those who listen, gave feedback, continued support, and allowing us the opportunity to do this for all the F1 fans. So if you're wanting to hear interesting facts on fast cars, automotive technology, and team competitiveness, well, you won't get that here. What Mark and I will deliver is raw, unfiltered talk to hopefully educate and entertain our F1 listeners. Mark? Oh, and of course I'm kidding about the not hearing interesting facts. Mark, you're all about facts, and I love that about you, bro. Where I just bring the ass in Flash F1. Mark?
Hey, it's also pretty funny. We're not so good with our facts, and we've kind of been fronting for the first couple of months that we were the one and only Canadian Formula One podcast. Turns out we're not. And it turns out that there is another one. And ironically, they're located in the same city that we're recording this podcast right now. So we probably should get our facts together. But again, thrilled to be here. We've got another great race to recap. My friend, should we kick this off?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's do this. Race is done. The weekend's over. We're getting set up for Spain. But before we do so, we should probably do a recap of the weekend in Baku. And I think, like you and I were talking about in the previous Fast Pass, it's an exciting track. It's a city course. There's a lot of things going on. Like you said, it's also a longer track, 6 kilometers, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's why there was only, 51 laps, and yeah. There's 20 turns in this track.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
More importantly, I think, and this is maybe the most exciting point of the weekend, 6 kilometers. How many corners did you say?
20.
And 300 manhole covers.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah. I heard about that.
So normally that's totally irrelevant, but free practice one. And maybe to kind of back this up a little bit, just to give our newer listeners a little bit of context. But the Formula One roadshow typically lands in town Tuesday, Wednesday, transports arrive, the teams start receiving the containers, they start unpacking the cars, unpacking the parts, setting up the garage. Late Thursdays, the cars are usually pretty much ready to go. And on Friday, they do 2 practice sessions. They do FP1, they do FP2. On Saturday, they do a final practice session called FP3. And then later that day, usually in the afternoon or the evening, they'll do a qualifying session, which we talk a lot about. Free practice one was pretty eventful. So imagine this. Williams, a team that has been struck with horrendous luck so far this year. George Russell, the talented Mercedes driver driving for Williams, gunning it down the long straight. And we've talked in the past about the fact that these cars generate a tremendous amount of downforce. They suck up dirt. They suck up debris. He crosses over a manhole cover that's not bolted down, sucks it out of the earth. It shreds the bottom of the car. Yep. Damages some components, cracks the chassis, and by all accounts is only 10 to 15 millimeters away from his ass. Like, it breaks the chassis apart. And I, funny, because I woke up on Friday morning, full disclosure, I didn't get up at 4 a.m. to watch free practice one, but one of my buddies, shout out Andrew Nand, had sent me a Twitter message showing the video, and I didn't really understand what had happened at first until I kind of learned a little bit more about the fact that, hey, it was in fact a manhole cover that got sucked out of the ground, cracked the chassis. Bad news for Williams. This is a ton of money. It's an expensive repair. They had to go to their spare chassis. To add insult to injury?
Well, first off, it's Williams, so really no harm, no foul, because yeah. You know, they're coming up last anyway, 0 points. But when I was watching some of the clips, Ferrari was rolling over the manhole and it was lifting it up a bit. So
interesting, I didn't see that.
It could have happened to anybody. There was like one or two other cars that were driving over it with the rear wheel and it just popping it up a touch. But I guess with the aerodynamics and the airflow underneath the car, it just sucked it up and destroyed Williams's vehicle.
Interesting. So I hadn't seen that. I'd heard a little bit about it, but you're right. It was probably just bad luck because he just happened to go over it centered. So he didn't clip it with the wheel. He went over it dead center. The car generated that downforce. It came up. And to add insult to injury, and this is pretty funny to be totally honest, the truck rolls out. It's got the crane on it. It loads it onto the back of the truck, starts driving off to drop it off the Williams garage. They've got a whole night of work ahead of them because they got to build a whole new car. Apparently there's a bridge on the track. The arm on the back of the truck that lifts the car up, the crane, clips the arm. The arm starts spewing oil and hydraulic fluid all over the FW-342, the Williams car. Oh, so by the time it arrives back, it's not only cracked in half, it's covered in fluid. So again, to your point, though, it's a Williams car. Yeah. Doesn't make
bad
a difference.
Bad luck for them, but yeah, you know.
Doesn't make a difference. But what it does do is destroy Free Practice 1. On to Free Practice 2, the Ferraris do pretty well. They go 1-2. Obviously, George Russell doesn't have a car out there, so you've only got 19 cars competing. Free Practice 3, Russell's back, Ferrari dominate, 1-2, looking pretty good. And then we jump ahead to qualifying. Maybe walk us through the kind of the most eventful piece of the qualifying.
Well, the most eventful piece is, I think I've mentioned this in the last podcast, where with all the turns with this track, turn 8, it's kind of like chicane type of totally. In and out type of swerve. And if you don't time that right, because some people are trying to cut the corner or yep. cut the apex that we've seen throughout the years and even this year, cars hitting that side bankment. And lo and behold, it happened to Leclerc and yep. he was beating himself up over it.
In your opinion, is there any other corner or switchback in the entire sport as tight as that?
No, that's because the way that it's angled, you know, they want to like get the most, they don't want to have to turn really sharply. So they're trying to cut the apexes on both the left and the right side. It's nothing like a Monaco where you've got a really hard left and hard right chicane. This one is just slightly enough for a car to get through. But if you don't time it right on clipping both those apexes, you're going to hit that right embankment or the left one and just bounce around like a pinball.
Totally. And I think that's probably the best description of what happens because it's so tight. It's also possibly at the most scenic part of the track because it's on that kind of runway up past the castle where you see a lot of the photos. But you're right. So Leclerc kind of, he hits the curb on the corner heading in. It kind of gets shunted over a little before that. And again, we were talking about Williams a couple minutes ago. Robert Kubica did the exact same thing in the exact same corner, that dangerous corner yeah. 8. He goes in and just destroys the car. And there was actually a lot of panic because at this point, Williams have already committed their backup chassis. And you can only bring one backup That's chassis right. to these events. They've already provided it to Russell. And the mechanics were desperately up all night trying to build it. So now they're in a position where they may need another chassis. And fortunately, they didn't. And they were able to get Kubica out. But they almost rode off two chassis in the course of a weekend. So he goes out. Qualifying gets red flagged. They've got to clean it up, get him off the track, rebuild the padding on that corner. And to your point, shortly after, Leclerc, who was dominating qualifying at that yes. point, goes into the exact same corner.
Yeah, it was just, you know, bad luck on his part. I don't know if he was just trying to make up for, you know, the last race and, you know, try to build himself up even more for the next race and the next race. And I don't know if it was the pressure, but I don't think it was the pressure. You know what? Like I've said before, he's a really clean driver. You know, people make mistakes and it was just, you know, happened to be Leclerc, who's, you know, an up-and-coming driver or a premium driver for Ferrari. He's been, you know, proving his worth since the start of the season. And, you know, I think, I don't know if it's pressure or the fact that he's trying to prove that he belongs in a Ferrari. And, you know, he was beating himself over that accident. So he was really upset and really hard on himself.
And you're right, he was upset, but oftentimes drivers are upset at the course, the marshals, another driver. He owned this one. Yeah. And it was really, really cool to see a driver that had that kind of humility. And I felt bad for the guy, man. I think the first thing over the radio was, I am stupid. I am stupid. Yeah. He was beating himself up and he felt so bad for the team and the mechanics that put that car on the track. And to your point, he felt terrible.
Yeah. And there was, when he got back, you know, his team was, you know, trying to console him. And then other drivers were coming up to him saying, you know, it's okay if these things happen. Leclerc made that unfortunate mistake and he'll learn from it.
Yeah. And it's crazy because you have these two incidents and these incidents hold up qualifying quite a bit. And to your earlier point, like this is a street course, there's a lot of tall buildings. So at this point, much of the track's in the shade. So the track temperature was about 45 degrees, I think, at the beginning of qualifying. But because of the delays with both Robert Kubica and Charles Leclerc, by the time they got back, it's in the mid 20s. So cars are losing traction, they're switching tires, they're changing their qualifying strategy. But ultimately, qualifying ends up with Bottas 1, despite the fact that Ferrari really dominated Free Practice 2 and 3, Hamilton 2nd, Vettel 3rd, Max Verstappen 4th, and a really, really, really impressive showing by our friends at Racing Point, Sergio Perez qualifies number five, by far and away their best qualifying of the year. Yeah, what did you think of that?
Yeah, no, I was really surprised. With the qualifying, with Racing Point, McLaren, they were doing really well in qualifying, and ultimately led them to a really great position for the end of the race. Where both McLaren's and both Racing Point finished in the top 10 and got points. So
incredible.
It was really good.
Incredible. And rounding out the top 10 from a qualifying perspective, obviously Perez number five, a real surprise. Kvyat six, Norris seven, great performance there. Raikkonen eight, Sainz nine, and Ricciardo 10. And disappointingly, once again, Stroll doesn't get out of Q1, the eighth straight race. But to your point, there's some good news coming from a Lance Stroll perspective. But overall, a pretty entertaining qualifying, even if it took quite a while. But overall, that kind of sets us up for the race. And maybe you want to kind of walk us through what we saw from a race perspective.
Okay, well, with the qualifying, I felt that the qualifying was more exciting than the actual race. The race
100%,
was,
100%.
The race was underwhelming for me, where, in qualifying, we had the crashes, we had the manhole covers, all that stuff that you want to see in a race, right? To see who's going to be in, who's going to be out, who can tackle the track. And, we get to the race day, and I think just the first like three or four laps were probably the most exciting part, and then just towards the end, I think the last 10 laps. So we've got several drivers that like Gasly, Kubica, Raikkonen starting from the pit lane due to either modifications or repairs, or I believe who was it? I think it was Kubica that got a drive-through penalty because they investigated the fact something to do with his start at the pit where he came in earlier, came in late.
It's not even clear what happened, but by all accounts, he got the drive-through penalty. Again, it's Williams. It doesn't make a difference. True. They were still 17 minutes off. They were still 17 minutes off the pace. But so for some unclear reason, they got a drive-through penalty. By all accounts, Williams wasn't even aware of the rule, so can't necessarily fault them for that, but...
Yeah, no, they all started from the pit, and the first lap, Mercedes were wheel to wheel. You had Bottas that took pole, and him and Hamilton were going into turn one, and they were like literally wheel to wheel, side by side, and Hamilton was on the inside, and to me it looked like he didn't give Bottas enough room because Bottas went a little wide, almost clipped the wall. And it went like that for a couple of laps, and Bottas and Hamilton started gaining their pace and breaking away from Ferrari.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to think too that, and I think you saw some commentary on some of the news sites afterwards, but the point being that, hey, maybe Hamilton was a little bit generous, gave Bottas a little bit of room, and maybe if this was race 15, 16, 17, maybe he would have been more aggressive. But Hamilton had a phenomenal start. He got right up to Bottas and aggressively pursued him through those corners and maybe could have had him. But the interesting thing is that despite that, Bottas starts to put some space between him and Hamilton really quick. I think by the second lap, there's already two and a half, 3 seconds between the two of them, which is pretty remarkable. Other stuff from early in the race, you see Max Verstappen quickly catch up to Sergio Perez. So it's interesting to see that Honda power going after that Mercedes-powered Racing Point car, which was interesting. So he nips him. Leclerc, because of that qualifying gaffe, ends up ultimately starting in 10th place. He starts fighting his way through the field. And it's interesting, too, because one of the things that we saw, and it was possibly because so many of the teams started their cars on the soft tire instead of the medium tire, a lot of teams started bringing their cars around lap 10, 11, 12. And I was watching this race with my wife, and both of us were speculating. The teams were just assuming that there was going to be a safety car and they'd get that extra opportunity to come into the pits, and ultimately there wasn't. So a lot of them had that really, really early pit.
Yeah, they were pitting like around lap 10. They were coming in and pitting. I think it was for most teams, it was a two-stop race that came in. And they were pitting early. I guess the tire change didn't really do too much for the drivers. Ferrari and several other teams were complaining about track temperature. What you've mentioned about this track, it's very beautiful. There's a lot of castles and architecture on the street track, and some of these large buildings shade and cover some of the track. So there's really a lot of fluctuation with track temperature for this particular race.
Yeah, and the city gets hot, but not necessarily until the summer. So it's still cool. It's spring. spring. You can see that a lot of the trees aren't fully in blossom yet. So it's still a spring day there. And to your point, a lot of the surface is shielded from the sun for most of the day. And you can see that during the race. I think one of the other early takeaways for me too was just how fast the Hondas looked. Like the Honda powered cars looked really good early on in this race, specifically Verstappen, just walking past that Mercedes-powered Racing Point car early on.
Yeah, there was a lot of straightaways, DRS zones. So that was the exciting part where you've got a lot of these drivers who are in the back half and they have the power. You can see where it's really evident during these long stretches into the turns.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the other thing too, one of the most dominating features of this lap is that primary straightaway, the one that runs parallel to the pit garages, that's where the passing happens. Yep. And that's what really separates within the sport the men from the boys, because if somebody's going to overtake, they're going to do it on that straight. And you saw it time and time and time and time again, which I think was actually ultimately really, really thrilling, because you got to see that real distinction and power from one car to another. And I also thought Ferrari was really going to walk by a lot of the competition there. And you saw that with Leclerc, who was making up pace through the midfield early on, but ultimately it didn't seem to benefit them. And the Mercedes just looked unstoppable down that stretch.
Yeah, Mercedes had better grip or better control of their tires. I don't know what they're doing, but Ferrari, the big talk was, again, Ferrari did not have pace. You know, they were hoping to have both really good cars this weekend, but Mercedes, right off the bat, I think after the first 3-4 laps, Mercedes was already breaking away from Ferrari, and they were managing the corners, and yeah, it was really good.
And you're right. It's the same thing that we've seen in every race so far. And even going back to pre-testing or pre-season testing, Ferrari dominates practice. They qualify okay, but come the race, they don't look like they have anything on the Mercedes. And to be fair, I thought this was ultimately overly critical, but Nico Rosberg was speaking to the fact that, hey, Ferrari threw away qualifying. I don't think they threw away qualifying. At the end of the day, they have a young driver who made a mistake and ended up in the wall, and he probably would have qualified on pole. It's a mistake. They didn't throw it away. But ultimately, regardless of how well Mercedes looks heading into the Sunday, they just can't keep up with the Mercedes cars at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree.
Interesting. So lap 12, Bottas already has 3 seconds on Hamilton. And then we see this really neat thing where lap after lap, the fastest lap token is being handed around.
Yeah.
You have Leclerc picks it up on 13, Vettel picks it up on 14. Then lap 15, to your earlier point, Robert Kubica gets called in for a drive-through penalty due to an error that I still don't understand on that pit start. And again, for our newer listeners, because he didn't qualify, he had to start in the pit, so he didn't actually get to start on the grid, so it was a penalty. So he was right at the back of the field early on. Cars start driving and start doing pitting. They're getting called into the box early on. So lap 11, 12, 13, you see
box,
a lot
box,
of cars.
Box, box, box.
I think our coworkers at work are sick of hearing that, because every time we pass each other in the corridor,
like, box, 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 box,
pick up the phone, box, 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 box. Mark, this is your boss. Shut up. But ultimately, it's pretty interesting. So you see all those cars come in that started on the soft. They're all switching to the medium compound. Hamilton gets the fastest lap in the 19th. He gets even faster on the 20th, and then on and on. Now, the one interesting note is that Leclerc started on a medium when most other cars started on the soft, and that kind of plays into the ultimate narrative of this race. Anything else from kind of the early midpoint of the race that you want to call out?
I don't have anything that comes to mind. I think we've covered most of it. I think the middle part was kind of underwhelming. It was mostly like, again, the start of the race and then the latter half. And we'll get to the latter half of the race where we start talking about a lot of the cars, you know, DNFing towards the end.
Do you want to start there?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess we can. We can talk about, I think one of the highlights ones was in lap 32, you've got Ricciardo and Kvyat. They kind of crash. You know, I think it was in turn three where Ricciardo was on the inside, Kvyat's on the outside, and I don't know if Kvyat was either braking late or Ricciardo didn't brake because he cut Kvyat off, and they both go into the turn runoff. And as they were kind of entangled there, Ricciardo backs up and hits Kvyat. But they show it later because we're wondering, okay, where was the crash? And you see all this debris.
Yeah.
And then on the replays, it's like Ricciardo cut off Kvyat, and Kvyat was in a position, but Ricciardo decided to back up. And he backed right into Kvyat, and that's where some of the carbon fiber and debris was there. And then they finally just got away from that. And then there was a virtual safety car.
I was, and to be fair, I was just as confused as you were because they didn't show it live, but you suddenly get this shot of the two of them down one of these runoff lanes and they're both sitting there. There's carbon fiber everywhere. There's pieces of livery on the ground. I'm like, what happened? They must've collided and both run off. But you're right. You have Kvyat on the inside of the corner and you have Ricardo on the outside and they're both fighting for position there. And then simultaneously,
no, I think it was the other way around. I think,
was it?
Yeah. Ricardo was on the inside because he cut off Kvyat. So Kvyat couldn't turn.
Because
Kvyat's slowed down on the outside to cut in, but then Ricardo didn't turn. He went straight through the runoff.
Yeah. And it was interesting because it looked like simultaneously both locked up. Yeah. They went in, Kvyat's in a position where he's going to need to back up because he doesn't have enough room to turn back onto the track. Ricardo could in theory just effectively do a Yui and get back onto the track, but he's impatient and he backs right into Kvyat, who's parked beside him, and that was the source of all the carbon fiber and the pieces on the track.
And I think they ended up putting in a virtual safety car in lap 39 for some reason. I can't remember who it was that lost. It was a loss of power.
That was Gasly.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. That's right. Yeah. That's right. And then right after that in lap 40, Grosjean goes out for a particular reason. I can't remember what that was.
Yeah. And to that point, so you have Gasly who goes out. His car just seems to run out of electricity or power or whatever the case may be. So he goes off into a runoff. It turns out later that it was possibly a gearbox. So you also see that message being distributed to Verstappen that, hey, FYI, watch for this particular issue. Ultimately, Ricardo retires. Kvyat retires. Grosjean retires.
Yeah.
Yep. So now you've got four cars out of the race. And I think the other interesting thing too was, I don't know if it was because of the type of accident, but in prior years, they've always had a true safety car, that like a physical safety car, which comes out. And the interesting thing about that is that when the safety car comes up, the field always bunches up. Mm-hmm. So when the safety car leaves again and you can race, you almost kind of have like a restart, like a hot restart, because all the cars are bumped up and anything can happen. When it's a virtual safety car, and maybe this is a technology that was installed for this year because maybe they didn't have those capabilities at this track in prior years, the distinction being that the field doesn't back up. The field doesn't back up with a virtual safety car. The cars are just told to decrease speed. So really, by the time that virtual safety car goes back, the cars really still have their positions and the gaps are still pretty consistent between them.
Do you want to talk about, some of the high points towards the end of the race? Like, let's talk about, you know, Leclerc getting the fastest lap. He got that point for the fastest lap. We want to talk about Racing Point and McLaren. Like I mentioned earlier, they all finished in the top 10. So both drivers, both cars. So they got drivers' points, constructors' points.
I love your idea of starting with the Leclerc one. So Leclerc starts on an interesting race strategy. So he starts on a medium when almost all of the cars start on the soft. They don't bring him in till much, much later in the race, at which points his tires are heavily degraded. They bring him in, they put him out with the softs. At that point, it's too late for him to be truly competing for a podium position. And then they bring him in again with three laps to go and give him a fresh set of softs. And normally you'd think, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But Sarah, my wife, when we're watching this, makes a great point. Like, the only reason they brought him in again was they wanted to give him the opportunity to go and chase the fastest lap. So, hey, you're not going to get a podium. You're going to pick up some points. Let's see if we can't get you an extra point. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And we've been talking about that since day one this season, that fastest lap point makes such a difference and adds that new dynamic to the race.
Yeah, definitely. With Leclerc finishing, I believe he finished fifth.
Yep.
And that, you know, just that extra point, you know, puts him up ahead than some of the other drivers that didn't get that extra point.
Yeah, absolutely. What else?
Ferrari pace. Did we talk about Ferrari? It's pretty evident that Ferrari didn't have the pace, whether they blame it on the car, track temperature, tires.
McLaren, I think you made a great point on that one. I think since 2015, we've been generally so used to being disappointed with McLaren performance and reliability, maybe except for some strong Fernando Alonso finishes.
And the Honda partnership with McLaren the last few years.
Yeah, so has been, like we talked about before, toxic. But to your earlier point, they both finished, these Renault-powered McLarens, both finished safely within the top 10, which is fantastic.
No, it was good. Really good for McLaren. I think, you know, this might be their year. They're not going to be like the top, like Ferrari or a Red Bull or anything, but it was really disappointing to see them like the previous years always in the on the back half with like Williams or going out in Q1 and all the troubles that they've been having with the partnership with Honda. But this year they're looking alive. I think they're you know, their separation from Honda and you know, the fresh palette and the new drivers just kind of, you know, giving them a chance to even if it's mid pack and, you know, gaining some points, anything, you know, top 10, you never know what's going to happen. If you're gaining points, you know, we've seen it time and time again where, you know, some races, it'll just come down right to the last, you know, one or two laps where, I think, was it this race last year, year before, where Stroll, like, yeah, you know, he went from leading the race to, yeah, you know, pretty much the last lap and he fell back. He got a podium, but, you know, yeah, he could have had first place.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so I think that's a huge win for the sport, and it's a huge quiet win for McLaren, because I don't think a lot of people are making a big deal out of this, but both their cars safely in the top 10, which was great to see. Sergio Perez had that phenomenal qualifying. He qualified fifth. He finishes sixth, so he picks up a stack of points. And Lance Stroll, and we talked about this earlier as well, doesn't get out of Q1, really poor performance in qualifying, but he goes out there and he has a fantastic race. And if not for some weird stuff from a team strategy perspective with his pit stop early on in the race, probably could have finished better, but he finishes inside the top 10. He has a ninth place finish as well. So not only does McLaren have both cars within the top 10, but so does Racing Point, which was fantastic to see. And the other really exciting piece about that too is the fact that we keep talking about the fact that Racing Point's running an old spec car, that really what they're driving right now is an upgraded 2018. By all accounts, and you saw this in some interviews with Sergio Perez, that they're expecting a heavily revised package for Spain, for Barcelona next week or for the next race. But if they can get both cars in the top 10 and they can qualify fifth, oh my goodness, I can't wait to see what they can do with an upgraded car. But yeah, both McLarens in the top 10, both Racing Points in the top 10, obviously both Ferraris, both Mercedes. And ultimately, who was the race winner?
Oh, Bottas. Yeah, Bottas. I'm really happy for him. You know, he's really pushing this year. He's got a great car. He's got a great mindset. Like when he won, he wasn't overly excited. It's just like, this is his job. He's focused. He knows what he needs to do. And he celebrates later, because like his reaction after winning the race was very kind of, you know, Kimi Räikkönen-ish.
Totally.
Räikkönen-ish.
Totally. Yeah. And it was a well-deserved win, because for those of you that are new to the sport or weren't watching last year or don't recall, he had this race last year. He had the race and he was going to win it, and he had a late puncture. He's out of the race. No points, no podium, no win. So it was kind of something of a, I shouldn't say a gift, because he earned this. He drove really, really well, but it was great that he was able to walk away with that win and put to bed the poor memories of the prior year.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. Like I'm really happy for the Mercedes team. Like, you know, Hamilton obviously top in his game, but it's really good to see that his relationship with Bottas is really propelling the team into better, you know, a better position for them. Unlike, you know, when Hamilton was partnered in with Rosberg, I really didn't like you know, the relationship and how the team was structured then, because it was really distracting to see. They were competing really hard. It seemed personal between each other, and they were, you know, hitting each other on the track, and there was a lot of animosity. And because Rosberg was really adamant about being a Formula One champion, so he was doing whatever it took.
So to that, I would say it's early.
Yeah.
And I mean, so good news to Mercedes. Again, we're both fans. Four consecutive 1-2 finishes. So if you're not a Mercedes fan, I fear that a lot of fans might be tapping out at this point. Like, hey, call me when they've had a couple of DNFs and the field's kind of, the standings have changed a little bit. But my sense is that if this was race 15 and, you know, Bottas had that kind of tiny lead in the Drivers' Championship standings over Hamilton, my sense is Hamilton's going over, or is going at him, and is going to be ruthless and merciless. And I think that's why some of the commentary coming out of this race was, hey, Hamilton was generous. He gave him a little bit of speed. He did go after him in that last couple of laps. Yep. Like, he was fighting to get into those DRS zones so he could modify that wing and go after him. But my sense is that if this was race 15, 16, 17, it's a different story.
Definitely. And I always reserve whatever happens in the first half of the race, and really look towards like after the summer break and they get back to the second half, because I've watched races in previous years where things really flip around in the second half, depending on where you're sitting with points. You never know. Like, you could have a bad run the second half. Like, you'd have a good run in the first half. Second half, you can have a lot of problems, like Ricardo had.
We've seen that. Yeah. We've seen that so many times.
And, you know, it just totally demolishes your year.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. So 1-2, fourth straight race for Mercedes. It's great for the team. Not maybe great for the sport overall. That inconsistency from Ferrari and the oddities and the peculiarities around strategy and some of that bad luck continues to persist. Vettel gets a podium, which is good. Max Verstappen ultimately finishes 4. We see Charles Leclerc 5. We see Sergio Perez with the extra point, which is a great call. Yep. Sergio Perez gets 6th. And honestly, I thought maybe he was the driver of the weekend, just qualifying 5th, managing to hold on to that was great to see. Aside from that, anything else that you can think of from the weekend?
No, I think that was it. Like, I think we've covered everything, and I don't know if you're missing anything, but yeah, the race in the middle, probably about, half the race was kind of underwhelming, and it was just the beginning and the end where we had all these highlights. And what we said earlier is that I found that qualifying to be much more interesting.
So did I. Yeah. Yep. And like I said, I wake up on Friday morning to that tweet from my buddy, and it's that shot of Russell going over that manhole cover and it getting sucked up. And then the other funny thing is you see all these great memes about the fact that one of the track marshals runs out there. And I don't know if you've seen this before, but he basically drops the manhole cover into place and he starts jumping up and down on it like Mario or Luigi would on top of a mushroom or whatever that runs around. So that was hilarious. And you're thinking like, oh, this doesn't look good. And then Raikkonen had a lot of comments about the fact that FP1 made the sport look amateurish, etc. But overall, free practice 1, 2, and 3 were interesting. Qualifying was really, really interesting, even if some of the teams had a little bit of bad luck.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Search for Flash F1 Official.
I do have to do a bit of a quick rant, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind, not at all.
So I think most people are aware that we're based out of Canada. We obviously want to kind of rep that Canadian angle a little bit. We're lucky here in Canada because the network that broadcasts Formula One, TSN, it's one of our primary dedicated sports networks. It's not over the air, it's not a free network, it's a subscription network that you would typically get on a domestic satellite or a cable package. They broadcast practice live, they broadcast qualifying the race live, which is fantastic. Sometimes they'll replay it at other hours as well. It's 2019 and I don't want to have a cable box and a cable package. I don't want to pay for that. At the same time, I'm a Formula One fan and I do want to pay. And I do want to see the races and I want to see them. I want to see them legally and I want to be able to contribute. Typically, my go-to would be I'm going to go subscribe to the app by the actual sport itself. And Formula One does have a fantastic app, and that app enables you to watch the races live. You can watch them on demand. You can see free practice, et cetera, et cetera. The tricky is, in Canada, while you can subscribe to the app, the on-demand races aren't available for 14 days after they happen, and you can't watch them live. So it's kind of crippled a little bit, and it's crippled a little bit because Formula One wants to protect our terrestrial broadcast rights holder, which is TSN. Yep. So the other option for me was I'm going to go and enroll, subscribe to the TSN Direct package. So rather than having to get a cable box, I could subscribe to TSN Direct. So TSN Direct is their online app. It promises to be able to watch all of their networks live and to watch everything on demand. So it's been a little bit underwhelming so far because the quality is not great. There's apps for a whole bunch of devices, including Xbox One, which is how we primarily watch it, connected to our big TV. But this weekend, I was really disappointed to learn that they don't make free practice or qualifying available through the on-demand content, which really sucks because I was excited about being able to watch free practice and qualifying at my leisure after work. And then ultimately today, the race wasn't available on demand for 8 or 9 hours after the race. So full disclosure, it was 4:30 in the morning. We had a crying baby. It wasn't an option to watch this one, but I hope that, hey, you know what? I'll be able to throw it on at 8. We'd be able to bang out the pod. 8 hours later, it's finally available. So my apologies to my co-host, Mr. Gill, because he's here at my house tonight at 10 p.m. recording this, when normally we'd be doing it at 10 a.m. So thank you for coming in. But just a little bit of rant about TSN. If you're going to own the rights, do a better job with it. Otherwise, please let F1 make the races available on demand and live, because quite frankly, I don't want to have a 36-pound Motorola cable box in my living room that looks like it was brought over to the Americas by the pilgrims hundreds of years ago. It's 2019. I shouldn't have to do that. So just a little bit of a vent, and I apologize to everybody.
Not a problem.
That's,
you know,
living.
What? I've got the big Motorola like cable box, and you know, I'm watching it live legally,
totally.
I'm recording it, so not a problem. I got to find a way to, you know, get those pre-practice and qualifying recordings to you legally, or maybe I'll just FaceTime you. Oh, hey,
hashtag just, wink, wink.
Yeah, I'll FaceTime you, and I'll just be standing in front of my TV as we're chatting. I've got the race recorded, but I do watch it live. You're more than welcome to come hang out at my house, or we'll, you know, I'll find a way to kind of get it to you.
I really like your place, by the way. Again, I don't think anyone listening would be familiar with this, but Gil's got this sweet townhouse. It looks like it's staged for showing. It looks so great. Like you think this hot bachelor would have kind of something of a messy place, sports gear lying around, food left on the counters. The place is immaculate, and it looks like it's been staged for a open house. It looks fantastic.
Well, you know how you spell Gil. OCD.
I get that. Yeah. Well done. Well done. Anything else from the last week? Maybe one other call out too. Our fast pass, we were a little bit critical of Vettel's mustache. Looks like he heard us loud and clear. It's gone.
Yeah. And he's, you know, I like him better when it's clean. He's clean shaven. And I think a lot of the posts and a lot of the news that were about Vettel's face was about aerodynamics, or hairodynamics is what they were calling it. So I really like that. I got a good chuckle out of that. And I can't see him with the facial hair. It just doesn't, you know, I've been so used to him. You know, the bad haircut's cool, but the facial hair doesn't work for me.
Yep. So ultimately, weekend of ultimate Mercedes dominance. We head into Barcelona. We head into Spain. The next race following that is Monaco, and then Canada. So the season's coming fast and furious. We're almost at the quarterway mark. So far, Mercedes is just dominating. A lot of the damage that Ferrari's experienced so far is, again, self-inflicted, which is unfortunate. Any last thoughts before we sign off?
No. Barcelona, Spain is May 12th. A lot of teams are expected to bring something to the table there for Barcelona. That's pretty much it. Well, I think we'll talk more about Barcelona and the next race on our newly Fast Pass podcast.
Yeah.
So if for those of you that are just listening now, our Fast Pass podcast is something that Mark and I have discussed, and we've researched and felt that, you know, in between actual post-race podcasts that we do, we want to be able to, you know, give you guys, you know, a taste, or, you know, leave you some breadcrumbs so you're not missing us too much. So we decided to do a Fast Pass where we can cut down our post-race podcast, and we find that our listeners want to know about, you know, what's going on and facts and news in Formula One the week leading up to the race. And we talk about the track, maybe the track history, race history from the upcoming race. So we want to give you guys some information, feed you guys some news. That way you're better prepared going into the race if you watch the Formula One race. And then our post-race podcast is literally just our rants, our opinions, each individual's ideas and opinions on the team, the track, the race, and all that stuff. Mark.
Cool. That's awesome. I think with that, maybe beg for a little bit of support as well from our listeners. If you're not already, please subscribe. We're now available, and we made this commitment before. We're now on Stitcher. Let me back this up, and let me make sure I got my ducks in a row. Yep, we're on Stitcher, we're on Spotify, we're on iTunes, we're on Google Play, we're now on all of the major platforms. So please, if you like us, even if you don't, please subscribe. At least let the phone auto-download it and you can delete it later, but please subscribe. And if you're on iTunes, please give us a 5-star review. That just helps us promote the podcast and create the exposure, because again, as you can tell, this isn't a moneymaker for us. We don't have advertising. We're doing this for fun and because we really want to promote the sport in Canada and help grow it with the younger demographic.
Yeah, and as I said in my intro, we want to thank, you know, all the listeners for giving us the opportunity to do this for all the F1 fans, and Mark and I just sharing our passion with everybody. This is great. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. That's all I got, man. We're out of here. Peace.
Peace. Thanks for listening to Flash F1. Come back for more tech talk, track talk, team talk, and definitely more trash talk. This is Gil and Mark saying sayonara.
This is Sarah signing off at Flash F1 with Gil and Mark.